Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone, and welcome. This is Tall Paul with PermacultureCentral.com. And tonight we have Joey DeLeo with us. Joey, how are you doing?
I'm doing good. I'm staying warm by the – well, I was by the campfire, but now I'm not.
I know, and I was too. And now I'm completely bundled up. I've got a sweatshirt and a full-on winter parka and a – what do you call it? Like a comforter. I'm all bundled up. Which is funny because we're in Southern California, and I'm not sure we have the right to even talk about being cold, do we?
Well, you know, if we were where it was really cold, then we would be used to it.
But you know what? I've noticed people that have come from cold places, when they come here, they really think it's cold because I think we have extra moisture or something around. I don't know. Like, it's humid here, so it's like a humid cold, if there's such a thing. All right, tonight's topic, fruit trees and winter care. And because, you know, a lot of the country and other people throughout the world who are listening to our broadcast, winter is, you know, upon them and the cold has come. Fruit trees have gone dormant, although they're not dormant here in Southern California yet. So there's some things that we can do to help our trees produce better next year. What do you think about that, Joey? Tell us what your thoughts are. You're a certified, internationally certified arborist, and I know you know a lot about trees.
Well, I like to think I do. So what I like to say first is that with winter tree care, fruit tree care that we're talking about, if you have somebody locally that has really nice fruit trees and produces really good fruit, you want to get their professional opinion, you know, pick their brains.
Even if they're not an arborist. I think what Joey is saying is you see someone who's got a beautiful garden, make friends with them, go out and see them and find out what they do.
Right, because then they're going to be in your locality. You know, they're going to be around with the same temperatures, the same kind of soils, maybe, and they're going to have their timing set up, and they're going to know what they have done in that area to really get some good production. So just remember that. You know, you're always looking for somebody who's doing really good. Because we'll, like, for instance, winter tree care for us is we have citrus trees, and they're producing, they're getting ready to put on, they're putting on fruit, they have fruit on them right now, so that's, you know, that is a different thing than a lot of people up north or back east and stuff.
Well, kind of the opposite of what everyone else is doing. So with the citrus, you're actually wanting to feed your trees, and with the deciduous trees, you know, your stone fruit, we're not doing that.
Right. So we can start with the stone fruits and the deciduous fruit trees. The one thing that I like to think about, too, is sometimes for us here in Southern California in this Mediterranean climate, we get our winter rains, and then that's all we get for the summer. We don't get any rain in the summer. So sometimes I'll like to also put down, when I'm thinking about this, to put down compost and some amendments during the winter time here, because the soil is still active. We can get nice warm temperatures during the day, and I let that stuff get rained in over the winter, some compost and some different fertilizers and amendments. So just if you're in our same kind of climate, it's nice to get that stuff watered in by the rain. You know, where it's snowing, it's obviously not going to be working like that. Everything's going very dormant. So as far as pruning, you know, once again, I like to say study. Too, you know, look it up, look at the different opinions that are out there, the different ways pruning's recommended, because we do a good amount of dormant pruning which is pruning when all the leaves have fallen off and it's gotten into after, well, I have to say here, we get rain, you know, other places will be getting snow. So it's a good time to go out and, because you can see the real, you can see the branches real well because the leaves are off of the tree. And you can do some structural pruning, you know, just to change the form of the tree. You can encourage buds to grow certain directions.
B-U-D-S.
Oh.
In case that's hard to hear. Cause it, you know, it could sound like bugs.
Oh, that's true. That's true.
So, buds. Yeah, the flower, fruit buds, flower buds.
Well, you had, yeah. let's just get right down to it. You had, you have a very productive mini fruit tree orchard. And what were you doing to keep up your production in the winter?
I was just at my house the other day that I rent out, and I have over 53 fruit trees, but I also have strawberries and other, you know, little things that are growing on the ground. So what would I do is, well, for one thing, mulch is always a big thing. Make sure that the ground is covered, especially here in the winter months for, you know, certain places so that you can protect the soil from freezing, you know. But we don't have to worry about that in Southern California so much. But what I would always do is make sure the trees are fully dormant. Now, sometimes that doesn't happen in Southern California because it never really gets cold enough for the trees to want to sleep. So you can force dormancy. So like on the apple trees, sometimes like I'll get, it pretends like it wants to give a second set of apples in the season when really that's, I don't think, smart or healthy. I'm not sure. I mean, I don't know your thoughts on that. But if I see that the trees, you know, it's getting to late December, even January, and there's still leaves or even flowers on the tree, it's mind-boggling, you know. But sometimes I force, you know, I take the leaves off in that case. And I've only really seen it on the apples. But for the other stone fruit, like, you know, peaches and nectarines are very, they grow so much, they're very vigorous. So they need a hard pruning to go back and clear out any branches that are growing inward towards the tree. Because the fruit, there's a lot of really good videos on pruning on YouTube that explain how to do it. And there's different techniques. But one of the channels I watched, it really wasn't telling you how to prune, but it was a fruit orchard, and they kind of sold their fruit. And they explained the different types of fruit. So whenever you see like a peach or a nectarine, even an apple that has red on it, that red is where the sun has hit the fruit. And that is a sign of a very sweet piece of fruit. So when you're at the store and you're looking for peaches, or for apples, if you see red on it, that means that it got a sufficient amount of sunlight for sugar production. And when you're pruning the tree, you want to cut it in a way that any branches that would create shade, those should be removed. And, you know, just always think of where's the sun coming from? And this is how permaculture, you know, is important, where we're always looking at the energy inputs, where's the path of the sun in throughout the growing season, and then anything that's an obstruction to that, you want to make sure that the obstructions are removed so that the fruit can get sun. Did you know that? About the red on the peaches?
I didn't. I'm learning stuff right now.
Yeah, Bella Vita Orchard, I think, and it says California Orchard, and they grow all kinds of natural and organic fruit, and it's kind of neat because they have these videos where they go out and they show you how they, you know, just different things. But that was the one tip, because I always, you know, go to the grocery store and I'm wondering, how do you know what, pears have the red on it too, a little blush of red, that means that the sun got to it. If you see a pear with no red, then it really didn't get a lot of sun, so it's not going to have a high sugar content. So that's what I think about when I start to prune.
When do you use dormant spray?
Well, dormant spray is used for to prevent pests from harming your tree, and I do use it now. Some of my trees, so your peaches have something called peach leaf curl. I'm not so sure I actually have it. I think some of what I thought was a peach leaf curl on my trees were actually aphids. But the peach leaf curl is a problem with peaches and nectarines that would require a treatment of a copper spray. And that copper spray, you have to have two applications of it. So once when the tree first goes dormant, and then once just prior to blooming, so that this, it's a fungus, I believe, that causes the leaves to curl. The other thing that's very important, not necessarily in the winter, but once those leaves start to come back, if you do have the leaf curl, to remove them. And I've heard some people say to prune hard, so like remove a branch or a twig that's, you know, still has the problem, and then take the leaves and the twigs, and don't compost them, don't leave them on site, so that way you're removing the infection and you're going to prevent future problems. But that's twice you do it, and then the dormant oil, the dormant spray, how many applications, Joey, is it? Once?
Well,
once
no,
enough,
no,
or twice?
Not always. It just depends on how much rain you're getting to.
Oh right.
To wash off your application or not, and that peach leaf curl, it lays dormant, well, semi dormant on the actual buds,
mm-hmm.
and then when that leaf comes out during bud break, it contacts the disease, and then it spread, you know, and it spreads onto the leaves. So that dormant spray is like killing the stuff that's on the tissue of the tree. So it's something. It's the way to think about it when you're looking at some of these things. So when that fungus is on there, you want to. You're spraying. You don't even. Lots of times, even if your trees don't have it, sometimes I like to, after I do winter pruning, because and you've made all these cuts, I like to time an application after pruning, because you've just opened up all these wounds and the tree is, you know, is dormant, so that a lot of the healing that goes on doesn't always take place as vigorously as it would during the growing season, where the tree can actually compartmentalize those wounds. So a little spray there helps. And you don't, there's different ways to kill those funguses and bacterias on the tree. You don't have to use copper, and it's good to alternate. They people will also use sulfur, so you can alternate between using copper and sulfur, and then there's other ways to do it too. You don't have to use copper or sulfur. You just have to start looking. Some neem oil has some properties that will actually are antifungal and antibacterial, and neem oil is also an insecticide, so you can have some effect on that too.
One thing about applying any oils to the tree, you want to make sure you do it when the temperatures are below 80 degrees, otherwise you could fry the branches. So they recommend doing it in the late afternoon so that the oil has time to cover the tree overnight, and then by the next day it's absorbed and it won't cause sunburn and other problems to the branches.
And there are also peach and nectarine varieties that are resistant.
Yes, yeah.
So that's something, if you're having a big problem already and you want to plant more fruit trees, that's something to look into.
But you can't get rid of it. Oh, there's the dogs.
Wow.
Yes, something's going on over there. So I had a tree that I inherited. I mean, I bought the house and it had an old peach tree, and it was in a location that I didn't like. So I moved the tree, and that tree had the fungus on it. And I believe I removed it the following year because I didn't want it to infect all the other trees. I may have given it to somebody, I don't know. But for the most part, if you have healthy maintenance, so if you're maintaining your property and you're looking for signs of infestations, you won't have a problem. And that this spraying of the trees is normal. But when you're buying, if you're buying a preparation, you want to make sure that it's organic. Look for OMRI, O-M-R-I, which if you see that, you know for sure that there's no, it's okay for organic foods. But some people make their own preparations, but kind of read labels, see what you're putting on your trees, and then ask yourself if you are willing to ingest that later. Would you drink it?
Well.
Oh, I mean, come on.
I don't know about that, but that's something to think about for sure, and the pruning, depending on the spurs and what kind of growth you want from the plant, how tall you want the plant to get, the tree. And then we'll summer prune here. I like to summer prune, go out and prune or thin fruit if the production's too heavy. But that's, obviously that's during the growing season. We're talking about winter care.
Yeah. Well, something I've seen you do and I've read about, I have personally not done it. And I really think it's something that you can tell us more about. And I think it's wise because we were talking about infections and things. But most of the pruning guides that I've read talk about cleaning your pruning shears between trees so that one tree's infected. If you go to the next tree and you're making new cuts, Joey, he, has a arborist. He's an arborist and has huge estates, very fancy estates that he has specimen trees on. And he literally has a different saw for each tree, and each saw is labeled for which tree it is. Meaning, he does not mix the trees, right, Joey?
Well, yeah, it's easy to spread disease.
Yeah.
When we're talking about fruit trees, it's not a big deal in between trees to just spray your pruners with, you can spray it with alcohol. If you're into bleach, you can spray it with bleach.
So tequila or...
anything like that, right. You can spray it, your pruner, and you can, it just depends. Some trees that I take care of that I can't, that are big specimen trees, I try to, sometimes I'll even spray between each cut.
Oh.
Because the real point is that that's how you spread disease, is through your pruning tools.
Mm-hmm.
And same thing if we're talking about peach leaf curl, if you're pruning and that fungus is on the exterior of the plant and you cut through it, and then now it's on your tool. So when you go to the next peach or nectarine or something, you can transfer it over there and start a whole nother situation. So it's a fun thing, or it's a thing to do if you're concerned about that. And it's not a difficult thing to do, and it just helps because you never know what you're going to transfer as time goes on. Think about it the same with your body. I know you're not going to, anytime take a scalpel to a person and then take that one to the next person. You can even use heat to sterilize the tool. Just be careful with how hot you get some things, a lighter, you know, a little flame is not going to, you know, weaken the steel. But if you're using torches and stuff, you can ruin the temper. Because I've seen different things in my trade where people use big torches to, like, sterilize tools. So if you get them too hot, they're not going to be, the steel's not going to be as nice. But that's probably, you don't, I'm thinking of something else that could be going on. A lot of it is form, and when you're pruning, you got to make some study of the different forms of the of fruit trees and what kind of form you'd like to see develop. And that's the big, when you're dormant pruning lots of time too, you're doing some structural work. So you really want to learn and study that kind of, that art of pruning so that you can generally get a tree. Because most of us here we're not talking about orchards. You know, these are actually trees that are around our house and that we're going to look at. So there's an aesthetic quality too to pruning fruit trees that are around your house, where you can have them attain certain forms that are pleasing to look at as well as productive. And then size, you know, keeping it to a certain size where sizing is a issue. You're keeping it low, smaller. Paul has an issue at his house where he wants to keep a view, and so he keeps them shorter than they normally would grow, so that he can still maintain a view, get production, have a nice crop, you know, have a nice yield. But then that's something to think about. I think we also make a study of the different trees that you have and the different problems that can occur. So you kind of start to get a grasp of what's going on out there. Like for instance, apple trees. If for us down here, you know, I have apples that look like they did in the summer almost, you know, they're not growing as vigorously, but they're green and they're healthy and happy and they're not going dormant. And if they put on flowers and they put out, you know, start to use all that energy to try to produce another set of fruit, and I start getting some frost coming in here, it, like, all that energy that the plant was expending to try to do something that might not really, probably won't work out usually, is not the best thing for the tree, in the sense of your production into the summer. So you can help it take a rest. Let it know that it doesn't have to go for it all over again. Something to think about.
I think we are a unique problem because it is so warm in Southern California that the trees truly don't know. I mean, they want to go dormant and they try, but then it's like, oh, it's warm, so they're kind of confused. So, you know, most people listening will not have that problem.
Well, they might have another. The other problem that can occur in really cold areas is you get this early spring. And then everything buds out. But see, you can't control this really, but this can happen where everything starts to spring out and grow, and then you get a hard frost again. But that's just something that's out of your control. But something that I want to remember too is I have a friend who lives up in Reno, Nevada, and their winters can be really hard. Cold and really dry. And he said something to me I never thought about, is like he has to pay attention that he makes sure that even when his trees are dormant up there, that if it's super dry and cold, that he needs to water them or else they'll completely dry out. I mean, and it's like getting a bare root shipment. You know, you get a shipment of bare root trees, they don't just say, oh yeah, let them hang out until you plant them. No, you got to they're kind of got the bag wrapped around them, some sawdust, and there's moisture in there. You got to keep those roots moisture on those roots. So so for people that maybe in that pretty hyper arid extreme climate like that, those are some considerations for winter care that you may need to apply some water to them so they don't completely dry out. Just like when you get, like I was saying with the bare roots, you're supposed to put them in water and soak them, you know, before you plant them. That's one of the recommendations. So they do need water still in that dormant time. They just, it obviously not tons of it, but it need to not dry out. So I thought I'd add that in there because it was, I mean, it's pretty specific to certain areas, but it can happen.
Right. Something else is that if you have a new tree, let's say a bare root tree, you're just planting, and in fact, we can mention that if you're thinking of buying fruit trees, now's a good time to order them. We buy, and I'm not making any money from this, but from groworganic.com, they have wonderful bare root trees from Dave Wilson Nurseries. And, you know, they're shipped, I think this year they said December 20th they'll be shipped. But anyway, it depends upon what you're ordering. Some will be shipped in January. But for the first 3 years that you've planted a tree, you're really not even supposed to think about fruit production. What you're really thinking about is structure of the tree. So you're going to prune the tree over a three-year period so that it has strong limbs. Any weak limbs you want to remove, that the tree is well-balanced. And, you know, you think of the light coming in for the fruit, you know, like I mentioned before, that the light can come in and touch the fruit. And so there's a couple different techniques. So like your stone fruit, so your peaches, nectarines, plums, those types of fruit trees like to have, or they usually prune them in a cup shape. So it's kind of hollow in the center, and it's got the arms going out around like in a shape of a cup. So the sun can come in from the top, and each of the branches gets the sun. And the first 3 years, that's what you're doing. You're making sure that the center is cleared of any internal branches that might be crossing into the tree. And then, you know, so your peaches and nectarines, they are very vigorous growers. They grow, and you want to make sure that you have that under control because they spend so much time reaching to the sky that they could, you know, if you make sure you do a summer pruning to make sure that that's cut back so that the energy, rather than trying to grow to the sky, and they also have something called water, what are they called, Joey?
Water sprouts?
Sprouts, water sprouts, these very...
Or suckers.
Yeah, they're suckers, but they're all over the tree, and they grow... Okay. In, you know, so rapidly, and they really serve no purpose. So those should be removed so that the energy that the tree has is going to the production of the limbs. And then after the 3 years, then you can start thinking about, you know, fruit production, and, you know, that's something you do. So that's the stone fruit. But other fruit, like apples and avocados, they like what's called a central leader. So they want one of the branches to be tall up at the top. And so that there's always a dominant branch. So kind of think of a Christmas tree. It's kind of like a triangle shape. Those trees, I think, like to be done like that. Same with the mulberries and, you know, the bigger trees that you would have. You don't need to worry about this cone-shaped like you do with the peaches and nectarines and plums. And I don't know what else, Julie. What do you... You know, you can let them be. Let Mother Nature take care of it. But, you know, some of your trees are going to get enormous, and you might not want that because it's hard to, you know, to harvest. And I think it's actually fun. It's one of my favorite things I do in the garden. I love to prune the trees. And if you listen to the experts, they say you really can't make a mistake. I mean, you can do something, and it's like, you know, you want to think it through, but ultimately, just do follow your intuition and keep these basic principles that we mentioned in mind, and your tree will kind of speak to you. But Joey told a neat story about his mentor taught him how to, you know, be an arborist, that he was up in this tree, and he says, see this branch? So go ahead, Joey, tell us that story.
Oh, boy. So this is when I was a bit younger, and I was studying with this older man, and he was teaching me to prune trees and look at their structure and about the biology. And we were up in this big pine tree, and there's part of it grows over this house, and he'd been pruning a lot of these trees for anywhere from 20 to 30 years and had the same clients. And in this one tree in particular, we were up in it together, and he pointed to this one branch that he's going to cut this one branch off and leave this other branch. And the branch we were going to cut off was considerably large compared to the one we were going to leave, but it was sizable, the one we were going to leave. And so he said, 6 years ago, I had made a decision that I'm going to take this branch off, and eventually this other one was going to take its place. So he had waited 6 years to remove this large branch while this other branch matured, and he had made space for the other branch, the younger branch, to actually grow out, you know, and be balanced, and in time to, when the time was right, to prune this, to prune off this larger branch, so that there wasn't so much so much mass over the house. So it was just something that always stuck with me, where I'm looking at something, and when we're looking at fruit trees, it could, you know, you're looking at potentially anywhere, you know, 20, 30, 40 years of a tree. And when you make decisions for what they call scaffolding branches, which are the branches that are going to be your main branches that the fruit is going to grow off, and other little branches are, you know, those, you can make those long-term kind of decisions, and you can do them thoughtfully, or you can not do them thoughtfully. And it always stuck with me, but it's what's helped me in my career. But
and you're building a relationship with your tree, and you make a decision. Well, I want it to look a certain way, and it's going to take time, but you make that decision, and you... So, like, for me, I have this one tree. It's, not a nectarine, but an apricot. Oh, my gosh. Apricot grows so quickly. And it kept growing into this pathway that I really didn't want it to grow. So I just had a little talk with it, and I said, listen, I love you. You're one of my favorite trees, but I don't want you to grow into the path anymore. So I'm going to have you grow sideways. So I just took off like one edge of this tree, and it's very happy. I mean, it literally understood what I was doing. I mean, it sounds funny, but, you know, I really cared about the tree, and I just pruned it hard on the one side because I did not want it to grow into the path, and it's now very strong, growing sideways. It's still three-dimensional, but it's, you know, on the one side where I didn't want it to go into the path, it's obeying, and it's, you know, really a nice, very nice tree with wonderful production, and it seems to be very happy. And actually what it did is, by opening up that one side, it brought in more sun, because the sun comes in from that side, you know, into the tree, you know, where it's needed. So that's kind of neat. The other thing is that, you know, I mentioned 3D, so you think of a tree as being a full and round tree. You can also grow a tree what's called espalier, which is two-dimensional on a fence or on a wall. And so what you would do is just train the tree to grow on a wire or some sort of, you know, support trellis. And people, if you look it up on the web, now you're going to make me spell it, but E-S-P-A-L-L-I-E-R, I think. Anyway, they have really neat and ornate designs. You can actually create really cool two-dimensional fruit trees that have a design aspect to it. But what's neat about it is you really don't lose a lot of production because all your fruit spurs are, you know, lower on the branches and the sun gets to it and you tend to get larger fruit. And, you know, it's really, I have 5 apples that I've done on espalier, and the production last year was just, you know, incredible production. Very, very good production on that. So I was glad to do that. Because I, at my house, I have a limited amount of space, and it's a technique or a method to, you know, have more varieties if you want, or to be able to put in a tree where you don't have a lot of space, because you can keep it the size that you want.
Yeah, and that's where the pruning comes in, because you're really controlling the form there. So you got to, you know, make some thoughtful pruning cuts and keep it within the scope of the space that you're going to give it to grow. I think back to some of for us, and then you. But there's also horticultural sprays, oils that you'll be that you if you. If you're having pest problems, scale and mites and things, you can before everything takes off in the spring or right around springtime, you can there's some timed applications of those oils on all of the different products you buy. There'll be directions and advice about intervals of spraying, when spraying, and they'll tell you exactly about when the buds are swelling, you know, which product you're going to use for that time, and how late you can do it. So you really, it's good to read the labels on any of those products.
Well, the other thing, and you mentioned earlier, is, you know, look at someone in your neighborhood who's got, you know, a really nice garden, a nice tree, be friends with them. But we're very lucky here in California. We have a group called California Rare Fruit Growers Association, and it's at crfg.org. And they have chapters all throughout California. Your state might have a similar organization, you know, a group of people that like to grow fruit. And they have monthly meetings on, you know, different varieties of fruit, and they will teach you how to prune, and there's just a wealth of knowledge. The other thing they do is when you do prune the trees, they collect this, what's called the scion or the cuttings, and they exchange it. So they'll label it, and they will share those cuttings with their so that you can graft those onto your trees to expand your variety of your fruit collection. So if you have an apple tree, you know, let's say a Pink Lady, and someone else has a Fuji, you could take that Fuji cutting and put it onto the Pink Lady tree, and now you have 2 apples on one tree. You can have, I've heard of trees with 100 different varieties on one tree. Now, they call those Franken trees, and I think it'd be hard to kind of keep track of the varieties, but my point is that there might be an organization in your area. Just type in on Google, like your state, so let's say Oregon Fruit Growers, something like that. And be a group out there for you that you can, you know, learn from. Joey's been at those meetings here in our Southern California, and it's real fun. People bring whatever's in season, like to share to eat at the meetings, and they usually have little raffle where you can win a prize, you know, like someone brings in a grafting or some plant that they want to share with the other people, and I enjoy it. I haven't been in a long time, but at some point I should start going back.
Yeah, or, you know, there's so many interesting groups to go to and study, so you really kind of got to find the stuff you're really interested in. Because, for instance, I've never grafted before. I just never got around to it. But that would be fun to do one day. So, but definitely taking those cuttings, because I do know that you start grafting a lot of different trees, you know, in the spring. So right when things are starting to get going. But one day, I'll make the time for those kinds of things.
Right. And the other thing is that there's a, is it the federal government or California? But there's a, you can write, what is it called? Germplasm repository, where if you are, they have all these research centers where they grow the different trees and things, and you can get free cuttings from the government to do research with. You know, like, so I wrote them like 2 years ago, and I said that I was doing research on fig production with drought tolerance, because I'm interested in having drought tolerant figs in Southern California. So they sent me, I think, about 12 different varieties of figs, and, you know, I did my little, out of 12, there was only one that kind of made it, you know, beyond, you know, it did the best of all. But it's kind of neat because that was free. And Joey, do you know what that is? I think I'll try to look it up, but you keep talking and I'm going to find it.
Yeah, I don't know. I've never tried that yet, but I've taken some cuttings and rooted them. I've done that kind of stuff. So, but which is fun. And I got one of my really good producers' figs right now is more of a commercial variety that a propagator next door, an older gentleman, he had given me because he was propagating some different cuttings, and so he gave me one. And that thing I put that in the ground. It's probably 7 inches tall, and it. Boom, it just took off, and it's we had some good figs off it this year. It's just to kind of get some nice figs on that could overwinter, but it gets a little too cold sometimes around here. But
I found it. So it's United States Department of Agriculture, Agricultural Research Service, and it's the National Clonal Germplasm. And I just looked up, because in California we have UC Davis, and I looked up UC Davis germplasm, and it came up with this U.S. site. So it's www.ars.usda.gov, and hopefully you can find it from there. But they have all kinds of different types of fruit, many, you know, hundreds of varieties, and you can tell them what you're looking to do, and you do have to pay for shipping. But, you know, for the most part, if this is something you're interested in, it's something you would want to look into. And you would do this during the winter. I bring it up now because it's a winter task to do your grafting before the trees begin to. Because you graft when the wood is still dormant. Is that right, Joey?
It was right in the spring. Like from the time the buds are like kind of beginning to open until the blossoming time. So,
but you need to get the wood before.
Well, yeah, you got to have it all ready.
Yeah.
And, you know, in some water.
And they send it to you and you can keep it in the refrigerator or a cold spot, and that it's ready for you when you're, you know, ready to go. But now, one other thing is, like, because Joey mentioned he did some of the planting of the from the cuttings, and I did that with one of my fig trees, and I literally, I just cut it off, and I stuck it in the ground. In fact, I completely neglected it. Put it in an area that was at the way bottom of my property, and sure enough, the thing took off. It, you know, it grew, it had fruit, and so certain things like figs and mulberries, I hear, are very relatively easy to
root.
To root. Now, figs, there's a whole science to that, you know, and there's a guy here in San Diego who's a fig expert, and he grows, I think, 500 varieties of figs, and there's a lot of good that. Let me see, Fig San Diego. I forget his name, but...
And it's, you know, during the winter, too, for people who aren't in the snow and stuff, it's, if you're doing any water harvesting, you know, kind of thinking about different ways to harvest some water to put it in the soil around your fruit tree area. So in the spring, they have a nice reservoir of water to really get going. In the spring, this doesn't apply to like the subtropics where I think you get you don't always necessarily get a wet winter. Usually, like when I was in Australia, their winters can be pretty dry, and then sometimes that's bad because then their spring is really dry. But for us here, we don't have that situation. So if you can anywhere where you can start to really put some water in the ground, harvest some rainwater, and get it to soak into those areas where your trees are, they'll have a really good storage of water, nice water, rainwater, and to really get going in the spring. And then it's also a nice way to flush the soil around the fruit trees if you can get a good amount of rainwater to accumulate there and really soak in. Mulch. I would put mulch. A lot of mulch if you don't get, I mean, if you don't have snow mulch, you know, because snow's like mulch, but a nice blanket. So that's something you can do too in certain climates. Sorry, keep putting down mulch in the winter, more mulch and more mulch, and then you really extend the moisture in the soil into the summer. I mean, that's our big thing here. As far as winter, this is what we're doing right now. We're just spreading mulch and compost and mulch everywhere because it's a great time, because as soon as the spring starts coming and the rains fall off and we're into summer, it's like you can really extend the moisture in that soil by controlling the evaporation, and the trees are just like, ooh, so happy about that. So that's something we're doing down here in San Diego area, Southern California, and could apply a lot of other places.
That fig website is called figsforfun.com with the number 4, Figs for Fun, and they have a lot of links to other things, and it's a good one. But anyway, Joey, anything else that we want to talk about, or should we wrap things up? Winter tree care, fruit tree care.
I think we did that. I think we got it pretty well covered. I mean, yeah.
Well, it's a great time to visit your trees, and you can see, you know, if you haven't built a relationship yet with them yet, go on out there, give them a little haircut, you know, prune, and then you'll find that you'll actually have better fruit production next spring. Next year, because, you know, they're happier, and, you know, there's not the tree when it's so big, it tries to support the entire tree, but when you cut it back a little bit, it gives it, you know, it has that root structure below that's supporting a smaller tree. And
yeah, you need less. You're gonna, you know, the smaller the tree, the less inputs, you know, fertilizers and stuff you need. So, and when the tree is getting bigger, lots of times it's thinking about vegetative growth, which is you want. I mean, you're looking at a balance between the vegetative growth and fruit production. And they don't always go together, so sometimes a tree will tend to be like, well, I'm just going to vegetate tons and grow more branches just to, because I want to get big. And you have to talk it out of it by a little, persuade it by cutting some of those branches off or some of those different water sprouts and different kinds of things like that. But you want to, you know, you want to look, seek a balance too, so that you know, the tree is trying to balance all these hormones and use them to produce wood and different things like that. So, but yeah, definitely start thinking about it. That's for sure.
And as far as like the cuttings or, you know, you're pruning in the permaculture application, would you say just to leave it in place unless it's diseased? So if it's diseased, remove it from the area. If it's not diseased, it's okay to leave in place?
Well, permaculturally, I would think about the labor. If you haul the branches out of where you're cutting them and what you were going to do with them after that, maybe you're going to save them to burn them, or you're going to, that would be cool, or you're going to put them in a mulcher and mulch it up and speed up the process. But is that energy efficient? Just depends on how far you got to go and things like that. And then if your fruit trees are in zone one, right around your house.
All right. Yeah.
You know, it's something I've dealt with, and I've decided that the fruit trees that are right up close to the house and where we walk all the time, I leave the little stuff, especially in the summer, little soft stuff with the leaves and things that I cut on the ground. But anything that's relatively large, I'll take out, so it's not so woody in there. And we put down so much mulch that the process of stuff breaking down is already going on heavily. So that's something I think about. Out in the bigger food forest area, the zone two area, I don't carry anything out of there. I just put it on the ground. You know.
Yeah, and it becomes future soil.
Over time. Yeah. Forest grows on a fallen forest. So something to think about for sure.
All right. Well, everyone, we're in the holiday season and safe and keeps warm, and we've missed a couple shows for various reasons, but we're glad that you're still listening, and we'll come to you next time whenever that'll be. Well, they're supposed to be every week, and we, you know, they're on the schedule that way, but for whatever reason we've had problems recently getting to that every week thing. So but we're still here. We love you. Let's talk a little bit about upcoming events. There's the Permaculture Voices conference coming in March of 2014. That is a significant conference for everyone in the permaculture realm. There's cutting-edge leaders. Go to permaculture.com for more information. It's an incredible thing that you need to go to. That's all I can say. And if you can't make it, send your friend, all right?
Huh.
Now, in addition to that, right after that conference, here at PRI Tipiwana Farm, so Tipiwana Farm here in San Marcos, California, has been designated the first Permaculture Research Institute master plan site in the United States. There's only about 10 of these sites worldwide, and so we're honored here to have the privilege of having the first in the United States. And we're going to be having a permaculture design certification course right after the Permaculture Voices conference. So sign up for our PDC course. You get a discount on the conference, the Permaculture Voices conference. And we have a very special guest, Jeff Lawton, is going to be here at Tipawanna Farm teaching one of the days of our PDC course, and he's also a keynote speaker at the Permaculture Voices Conference. So that's significant for us, and then we have some other very wonderful teachers for the PDC.
That's fun. We'll have multiple teachers, so it's not just one teacher the whole time. There'll be different teachers coming in and giving their expertise on different days. That'd be cool.
And so they have, their own perspective and history experience to make this a very rich and exciting training. So for more information, go to evokehope.org, and there's a section there for the PDC. You can find out the dates and the costs and things like that. And really, if you've never been to Southern California, it's a wonderful place to be. And, come on down. We'd love to meet you. And if you can, go to Evoke Hope and then share that information on your Facebook and get the word out, because we have people already signed up from Canada, and, it's going to be an international training. It's very exciting, and we, want as many people. Well, there's a limit to the number of people. We want to make sure that we have exposure and that people are aware of both the conference and the PDC that's coming up. All right? Anything else, Joey?
Nope. That's it.
All right. So we'll see you next time.
All right. Thank you, everybody. Bye.
Bye.